Hi guys, welcome back to the bedtime stories for this week. Today I'm going to be starting with chapter 23 of The Fault in Our Stars. I'm going to try and finish this book up today. I have about an hour that I have to record, so hopefully it shouldn't take longer than that. So let's go ahead and get started, okay guys? Chapter 23. A couple days later, I got up around noon and drove over to Isaac's house. He answered the door himself. "My mom took Graham to a movie," he said. "We should go do something," I said. "Can the something be play blind guy video games while sitting on the couch?" "Yeah, that's just the kind of something I had in mind." So we sat there for a couple hours talking to the screen together, navigating this invisible labyrinth cave without a single lumen of light. The most entertaining part of the game, by far, was trying to get the computer to engage us in humorous conversation. Me, touch the wall. Computer, you touch the cave wall. It is moist. Isaac, lick the cave wall. Computer, I do not understand. Repeat. Me, hump the moist cave wall. Computer, you attempt to jump. You hit your head. Isaac, not jump. Hump. Computer, I don't understand. Isaac, dude, I've been alone in the dark in this cave for weeks, and I need some relief. Hump the cave wall. Computer, you attempt to jump. Me, thrust pelvis against the cave wall. Computer, I do not. Isaac, make sweet love to the cave. Computer, I do not. Me, fine. Follow left branch. Computer, you follow the left branch. The passage narrows. Me, crawl. Computer, you crawl for 100 yards. The passage narrows. Me, snake crawl. Computer, you snake crawl for 30 yards. A trickle of water runs down your body. You reach a mound of small rocks, blocking the passageway. Me, can I hump the cave now? Computer, you cannot jump without standing. Isaac, I dislike living in a world without Augustus Waters. Computer, I don't understand. Isaac, me neither. Pause. He dropped the remote onto the couch between us and asked, "Do you know if it hurt or whatever?" He was really fighting for breath, I guess, I said. He eventually went unconscious, but it sounds like, yeah, it wasn't great or anything. Dying sucks. Yeah, Isaac said. And then after a long time, it just seems so impossible. Happens all the time, I said. You seem angry, he said. Yeah. We just sat there for a long time, which was fine. And I was thinking about way back in the very beginning in the literal heart of Jesus, when Gus told us that he feared oblivion, and I told him that he was fearing something universal and inevitable, and how really, the problem is not suffering itself or oblivion itself, but the depraved meaninglessness of these things, the absolutely inhuman nihilism of suffering. I thought of my dad telling me that the universe wants to be noticed. But what we want is to be noticed by the universe, to have the universe give a shit what happens to us. Not the collective idea of sentient life, but each of us, as individuals. Gus really loved you, you know, he said. I know. He wouldn't shut up about it. I know, I said. It was annoying. I didn't find it that annoying, I said. Did he ever give you that thing in writing? What thing? That sequel or whatever to the book you liked. I turned to Isaac. What? He said he was working on something for you, but he wasn't that good of a writer. When did he say this? I don't know, like after he got back from Amsterdam at some point. At which point, I pressed. Had he not a chance to find it? Finish it? Had he finished it and left it on his computer or something? Isaac asked, I don't know. We talked about it over here once. He was over here like, we put it on my email machine. And I just got an email from my grandmother. I can check on the machine if you... Yeah, where is it? He'd mentioned it a month before. A month. Not a good month, admittedly, but still, a month. There was enough time for him to have written something, at least. There was still something of him, or by him, at least, floating around out there. And I needed it. I'm going to go to his house, I told Isaac. I hurried out to the minivan and hauled the oxygen cart up and into the passenger seat. I started the car. A hip-hop beat blared from the stereo, and as I reached to change the radio station, someone started rapping in Swedish. I swiveled around and screamed when I saw Peter Van Houten sitting in the back seat. "I apologize for alarming you," Peter Van Houten said over the rapping. He was still wearing the funeral suit. Almost a week later, he smelled like he was sweating alcohol. "You're welcome to keep the CD," he said. "It's Snook, one of the major Swedish..." Get out of my car!" I turned off the stereo. "It's your mother's car, as I understand it," he said. "Also, it wasn't locked." "Oh my God, get out of the car or I'll call 911, dude. What is your problem?" "If only there was just one," he mused. "I am here simply to apologize. You were correct in noting earlier that I am a pathetic little man, dependent upon alcohol. I had one acquaintance who only spent time with me because I paid her to do so. Worse still, she has since quit, leaving me the rare soul who cannot acquire companionship even through bribery. It is all true, Hazel, all that and more." "Okay," I said. It would have been a more moving speech if he had not slurred his words. "You remind me of Anna." "I remind a lot of people of a lot of people," I answered. "I really have to go." "So drive," he said. "Get out." "No, you remind me of Anna," he said again. After a second, I put the car in reverse and backed out. I couldn't make him leave, and I didn't have to. I'd drive to Gus's house, and Gus's parents would make him leave. "You are, of course, familiar," Van Houten said, "with Antoinetta Mio." "Yeah, no," I said. I turned on the stereo, and the Swedish hip-hop blared, but Van Houten yelled over it. "She may soon be the youngest non-martyr saint ever beatified by the Catholic Church. She had the same cancer that Mr. Waters had. They removed her right leg. The pain was excruciating. And as she lay dying at the ripened age of 6 from this agonizing cancer, she told her father, 'Pain is like fabric. The stronger it is, the more it's worth.' Is that true, Hazel?" I wasn't looking at him directly, but at his reflection in the mirror. "No," I shouted over the music. "That's bullshit." But don't you wish it were true?" he cried back. And I cut the music. "I'm sorry I ruined your trip. You were too young. You were..." He broke down, as if he had a right to cry over Gus. Van Houten was just another of the endless mourners who did not know him. Another too late lamentation on his wall. "You didn't ruin our trip, you self-important bastard. We had an awesome trip." "I am trying," he said. "I am trying, I swear." It was around then that I considered Peter Van Houten had a dead person in his family. I considered the honesty with which he had written about cancer kids. The fact that he couldn't speak to me in Amsterdam except to ask if I had dressed like her on purpose. His shittiness around me and Augustus. His aching question about the relationship between pain, extremity, and its value. He sat back there drinking, an old man who'd been drunk for years. I thought of a statistic I wish I didn't know. Half of marriages end in the year after a child's death. I looked back at Van Houten. I was driving down college and I pulled over behind a line of parked cars and asked, "You had a kid who died?" "My daughter," he said. "She was 8. Suffered beautifully. Will never be beatified." "She had leukemia," I asked. He nodded. "Like Anna," I said. "Very much like her, yes. You were married?" "No. Well, not at the time of her death. I was insufferable long before we lost her. Grief does not change you, Hazel. It reveals you." "Did you live with her?" "No, not primarily. Although at the end, we brought her to New York, where I was living, for a series of experimental tortures that increased the misery of her days without increasing the number of them." After a second, I said, "So it's like you gave her the second life where she got to be a teenager." "I suppose that would be a fair assessment," he said, and then quickly added, "I assume you're familiar with Philippa Foot's trolley problem thought experiment? And then I show up at your house and I'm dressed like the girl you hoped she would live to become and you're like all taken aback by it. There's a trolley running out of control and on a track," he said. "I don't care about your stupid thought experiment," I said. "It's Philippa Foot's, actually." "Well, hers either," I said. "She didn't exactly understand why it was happening," he said. "I had to tell her she would die. Her social worker said I had to tell her." I had to tell her she would die, so I told her she was going to heaven. She asked if I would be there, and I said that I would not yet. But eventually, she said, and I promised that yes, of course, very soon. And I told her that in the meantime, we had a great family up there that would take care of her. And she asked me when I would be up there, and I told her soon, 22 years ago. I'm sorry. So am I. After a while, I asked, what happened to her mom? He smiled. You're still looking for your sequel, you little rat. I smiled back. You should go home, I told him. Sober up. Write another novel. Do the thing you're good at. Not many people are lucky enough to be so good at something. He stared at me through the mirror for a long time. Okay, he said. Yeah, you're right, you're right. But even as he said it, he pulled out his mostly empty fifth of whiskey. He drank, recapped the bottle, and opened the door. Goodbye, Hazel. Take it easy, Van Houten. He sat down on the curb beside the car. As I watched him shrink in the rearview mirror, he pulled out the bottle and for a second it looked as if he would leave it on the curb. And then he took a swig. It was a hot afternoon in Indianapolis, the air thick and still like we were inside of a cloud. It was the worst kind of air for me, and I told myself it was just the air when the walk from his driveway to his front door felt infinite. I rang the doorbell, and Gus's mom answered. Oh, Hazel, she said, and kind of enveloped me, crying. She made me eat some eggplant lasagna. I guess a lot of people have brought them food or whatever, with her and Gus's dad. How are you? I miss him. Yeah. I didn't really know what to say. I just wanted to go downstairs and find whatever he had written for me. Plus, the silence in the room really bothered me. I wanted them to be talking to each other, comforting or holding hands or whatever. But they just sat there eating very small amounts of lasagna, not even looking at each other. Heaven needed an angel, his dad said after a while. I know, I said. Then his sisters and their mess of kids showed up and piled into the kitchen. I got up and hugged both his sisters and then watched the kids run around the kitchen with their sorely needed surplus of noise and movement. Excited molecules bouncing against each other and shouting, you're it, no, you're it, no, I was it, but then I tagged you. You didn't tag me, you missed me. Well, I'm tagging you now, no, dumb butt, it's a timeout. Daniel, do not call your brother a dumb butt. Mom, if I'm not allowed to use that word, then how come you used it? Dumb butt, and then chorically, dumb butt, dumb butt, dumb butt, dumb butt, dumb butt. And, at the table, Gus's parents were now holding hands, which did make me feel better. Isaac told me Gus was writing something for me, I said. The kids were still singing their dumb butt song. We can check his computer, his mom said. He wasn't on it much the last few weeks, I said. That's true. I'm not even sure we brought it upstairs. Is it still in the basement, Mark? No idea. Well, I said, can I? I nodded towards the basement door. We're not ready, his dad said. But of course. Yes, Hazel, of course you can. I walked downstairs, past his unmade bed, past the gaming chairs beneath the TV. His computer was still on. I tapped the mouse to wake it and then searched for his most recently edited files. Nothing in the last month. The most recent thing was a response paper to Toni Morris's The Bluest Eye. Maybe he'd written something by hand. I walked over to his bookshelves, looking for a journal or a notebook. Nothing. I flipped through his copy of An Apparel Affliction. He hadn't left a single mark in it. I walked to his bedside table next. Infinite Mayhem, the ninth sequel to The Price of Dawn, lay atop the table next to his reading lamp. The corner of page 138 turned down. He never made it to the end of the book. Spoiler alert, Mayhem survives, I said out loud to him, just in case he could hear me. And then I crawled into his unmade bed, wrapping myself in his comforter like a cocoon, surrounding myself with his smell. I took out my cannula so I could smell better, breathing him in and breathing him out, the scent fading even as I lay there. My chest burning until I couldn't distinguish among the pains. I sat up in the bed after a while and reinserted my cannula and breathed for a while before going up the stairs. I just shook my head no in response to his parents' expectant looks. The kids raced past me, one of Gus's sisters, I could not tell them apart, said, "Mom, do you want me to take them to the park or something?" "No, no, they're fine." "Is there anywhere he might have put a notebook? Like by his hospital bed or something?" The bed was already gone, reclaimed by hospice. "Hazel," his dad said, "you were there every day with us. You..." "He wasn't alone much, sweetie. He wouldn't have had time to write anything. I know you want..." "I want that too. But the messages he leaves for us now are coming from above, Hazel." He pointed towards the ceiling as if Gus were hovering just above the house. And maybe he was, I don't know. I didn't feel his presence, though. "Yeah," I said. "I promised to visit them in a couple days." And I never quite caught his scent again. Chapter 24. 3 days later, on the 11th day, A.G., Gus's father called me in the morning. I was still hooked to the BiPAP, so I didn't answer, but I listened to his message the moment it beeped through my phone. "Hazel, hi, it's Gus's dad. I found a black moleskin notebook in the magazine rack that was near his hospital bed. I think near enough that he could have reached it. Unfortunately, there's no writing in the notebook. All the pages are blank, but the first, I think three or four, the first few pages are torn out of the notebook. We looked through the house, but we couldn't find the pages. So I don't know what to make of that, but maybe those pages are what Isaac was referring to. Anyway, I hope that you're doing okay. You're in our prayers every day, Hazel. Okay, bye." Three or four pages ripped from a moleskin notebook no longer in Augustus Waters' house. Where would he leave them for me? Taped to Funky Bones? No, he wasn't well enough to get there. The literal heart of Jesus. Maybe he'd left it there for me on his last good day. So I left 20 minutes early for support group the next day. I drove over to Isaac's house, picked him up, and then we drove down to the literal heart of Jesus with the windows of the minivan down, listening to the Hectic Glow's leaked new album, which Gus would never hear. We took the elevator. I walked Isaac to a seat in the circle of trust, and then slowly worked my way around the literal heart. I checked everywhere. Under the chairs, around the lectern I'd stood behind while delivering my eulogy, under the treat table, on the bulletin board packed with Sunday school kids' drawings of God's love. Nothing. It was the only place we'd been together in those last days besides his house. And it either wasn't here or I was missing something. Perhaps he'd left it in with me in the hospital, but if so, it had certainly almost been thrown away after his death. I was really out of breath by the time I settled into a chair next to Isaac, and I devoted the entirety of Patrick's nutless testimony to telling my lungs they were okay, but they could breathe. There was enough oxygen. They'd been drained only a week before Gus died. I watched the amber cancer water dribble out of me through the tube, and yet already they felt full again. I was so focused on telling myself to breathe that I didn't notice Patrick saying my name at first. I snapped to attention. "Yeah?" I asked. "How are you?" "I'm okay, Patrick. I'm a little out of breath. Would you like to share a memory of Augustus with the group?" "I wish I would just die, Patrick. Do you ever wish you would just die?" "Yes," Patrick said without his unusual pause. "Yes, of course. So why don't you?" I thought about it. My old stock answer was that I wanted to stay alive for my parents, because they would be all gutted and childless in the wake of me. And that was still kind of true. But it wasn't it, exactly. I don't know. "In the hopes that you'll get better?" "No," I said. "No, it's not that. I don't really know, Isaac," I asked. I was tired of talking. Isaac started talking about true love. I couldn't tell them what I was thinking because it seemed cheesy to me. But I was thinking about the universe wanting to be noticed, and how I had to notice it as best as I could. I felt that I owed a debt to the universe that only my attention could repay, and also that I owed a debt to everyone who didn't get to be a person anymore, and everyone who hadn't got to be a person yet, what my dad had told me, basically. I stayed quiet for the rest of support group, and Patrick said a special prayer for me, and Gus's name was tacked onto the long list of the dead, 14 of them for every one of us, and we promised to live out our best today, and then I took Isaac to the car. When I got home, Mom and Dad were at the dining room table on their separate laptops, and the moment I walked in the door, Mom slammed her laptop shut. What's on the computer? Just some antioxidant recipes. Ready for BiPAP and America's Next Top Model? She asked. I'm just going to lay down for a minute. Are you okay? Yeah, just tired. Well, you've got to eat before you... Mom, I am aggressively unhungry. I took a step towards the door, but she cut me off. Hazel, you have to eat. Just get some... No, I'm going to bed. No, Mom said, you're not. I glanced at my dad, who shrugged. It's my life, I said. You're not going to starve yourself to death just because Augustus died. You're going to eat dinner. I was really pissed off for some reason. I can't eat, Mom. I can't. Okay? I tried to push past her, but she grabbed both my shoulders and said, Hazel, you're eating dinner. You need to stay healthy. No, I shouted. I'm not eating dinner, and I can't stay healthy because I'm not healthy. I am dying, Mom. I am going to die and leave you here alone, and you won't have a me to hover around you, and you won't be a mother anymore. And I'm sorry, but I can't do anything about it, okay? I regretted it as soon as I said it. You heard me? What? Did you hear me say that to your father? Her eyes welled up. Did you? I nodded. Oh God, Hazel, I'm sorry. I was wrong, sweetie. That wasn't true. I said that in a desperate moment. It's not something that I believe. She sat down and I sat down next to her. I was thinking that I should have just puked up some pasta for her instead of getting pissed off. What do you believe then? I asked. As long as either of us is alive, I will be your mother, she said. Even if you die, I... When? I said. She nodded. Even when you die, I will still be your mom, Hazel. I won't stop being your mom. Have you stopped loving Gus? I shook my head. Well, then how could I stop loving you? Okay, I said. My dad was crying now. I want you guys to have a life, I said. I worry that you won't have a life. That you'll sit around here all day with no me to look after and stare at the walls and want to go off yourselves. After a minute, Mom said, I'm taking some classes. Online through IU to get my master's in social work. In fact, I wasn't looking at antioxidant recipes. I was writing a paper. Seriously? I don't want you to think I'm imagining a world without you, but if I get my MSW, I can counsel families in crisis or lead groups dealing with illnesses in their families or... Wait, you're going to become a Patrick? Well, not exactly. There are all kinds of social work jobs. Dad said... We've been worried you'll feel abandoned. It's important for you to know that we'll always be here for you, Hazel. Your mom isn't going anywhere. No, this is great. This is fantastic. I was really smiling. Mom is going to become a Patrick. She'll be a great Patrick. She'll be so much better at it than Patrick is. Thank you, Hazel. That means everything to me. I nodded. I was crying. I couldn't get over how happy I was. Crying genuine tears of actual happiness for the first time in maybe forever, imagining my mom as a Patrick. It made me think of Anna's mom. She would have been a good social worker, too. After a while, we turned on the TV and watched America's Next Top Model. But I paused it after 5 seconds because I had all these questions for Mom. So, how close are you to finishing? If I go up to Bloomington for a week this summer, I should be able to finish by December. How long have you been keeping this from me, exactly? A year. Mom, I didn't want to hurt you, Hazel. Amazing. So whenever you're waiting for me outside of the support group or whatever, you're always, yes, working or reading? This is so great. If I'm dead, I want you to know that I will be sighing at you from heaven every time you ask someone to share their feelings. My dad laughed. I'll be right there with you, kiddo, he assured me. And finally, we watched America's Next Top Model. Dad tried really hard not to die of boredom, and he kept messing up which girl was which, saying, we like her? No, no, we revile Anastasia. We like Antonia, the other blonde, Mom explained. They're all tall and horrible, Dad responded. Forgive me for failing to tell the difference. Dad reached across me for Mom's hand. Do you think you guys will stay together if I die? I asked. Hazel, what? Sweetie. She fumbled for the remote control and paused the TV again. What's wrong? Just, do you think you would? Yes, of course, Dad said. Your mom and I love each other, and if we lose you, we'll go through it together. Swear to God, I said. I swear to God, he said. I looked back at Mom. Swear to God. And she agreed. Why are you even worrying about this? I just don't want to ruin your life or anything. Mom leaned forward and pressed her face into my messy puff of hair and kissed me at the very top of my head. I said to Dad, I don't want you to become like a miserable, unemployed alcoholic or whatever. My mom smiled. Your father isn't Peter Van Houten, Hazel. You of all people know that it's possible to live with pain. Yeah, okay, I said. And Mom hugged me, and I let her, even though I really didn't want to be hugged. Okay, you can unpause it, I said. Anastasia got kicked off, and she threw a fit. It was awesome. I ate a few bites of dinner, bow tie pasta with pesto, and I managed to keep it down. Chapter 25. This is the last chapter. I woke up the next morning panicked because I dreamed of being alone and boatless in a huge lake. I bolted up, straining against the BiPAP, and felt Mom's arm on me. Hi, are you okay? My heart raced, but I nodded. Mom said, Caitlin's on the phone for you. And I pointed at my BiPAP. She helped me get it off and hooked up to the Philip, and then I finally took myself from Mom and said, Hey, Caitlin. Just calling to check in, she said. See how you're doing. Yeah, thanks, I said. I'm doing okay. You've just had the worst luck, darling. It's unconscientiousable. I guess, I said. I didn't think much about my luck anymore, one way or the other. Honestly, I didn't really want to talk with Caitlin about anything, but she kept dragging the conversation along. So what was it like, she asked. Having your boyfriend die? It sucks. No, she said. Being in love. Oh, I said. Oh. It was nice to spend time with someone so interesting. We were very different. We disagreed about a lot of things. But he was always so interesting, you know? Alas, I do not. The boys I'm acquainted with are vastly uninteresting. He wasn't perfect or anything. He wasn't your fairy tale Prince Charming or whatever. He tried to be like that sometimes, but I liked him best when that stuff fell away. Do you have like a scrapbook of pictures and letters he wrote? I have some pictures. He never really wrote me letters, except, well, there are some missing pages from his notebook that might have been for me, but I guess he threw them away or they got lost or something. Maybe he mailed them to you, she said. Nah, they'd have gotten here. Then maybe they weren't written for you, she said. Maybe. I mean, not to depress you or anything, but maybe he wrote them for someone else and mailed them. Van Houten, I shouted. Are you okay? Was that a cough? Caitlin, I love you. You are a genius, and I have to go. I hung up, rolled over, reached for my laptop, turned it on, and emailed Van Houten. Van Houten. I believe Augustus Waters sent a few pages from a notebook to Peter Van Houten shortly before he, Augustus, died. It is very important to me that someone read these pages. I want to read them, of course, but maybe they weren't written for me. Regardless, they must be read. They must be. Can you help? Your friend, Hazel Grace Lancaster. This wasn't to Van Houten, this was to his assistant. She responded later this afternoon. Dear Hazel, I did not know that Augustus had died. I am very sad to hear this news. He was such a very charismatic young man. I am so sorry and so sad. I have not spoken to Peter since the day I resigned. It is very late at night here, but I am going to go over to his house first thing in the morning to find this letter and force him to read it. Mornings were his best time, usually. Your friend, Miss L. P.S. I am bringing my boyfriend in case we have to physically restrain Peter. I wondered why he'd written Van Houten in those last days instead of me, telling Van Houten that he'd redeemed only if he gave me my sequel. Maybe the notebook pages had just repeated his request to Van Houten. It made sense, Gus leveraging his terminality to make my dream come true. The sequel was a tiny thing to die for, but it was the biggest thing left at his disposal. I refreshed my email continually that night, slept for a few hours, and then commenced to refreshing around 5 in the morning. But nothing arrived. I tried to watch TV to distract myself, but my thoughts kept drifting back to Amsterdam. How fun it would be to bounce on the back of her bike down the brick streets with her curly red hair blowing into my face. The smells of the canals and cigarette smoke, all the people sitting outside the cafes drinking beer, saying their R's and G's in a way I'd never learn. I missed the future. Obviously, I knew even before this reference that I wouldn't grow old with Augustus Waters. But thinking about her and her boyfriend, I felt robbed. I would probably never see the ocean from 30,000 feet above, so far up that you can't make out the waves or any boats, so that the ocean is a great and endless monolith. I could imagine it. I could remember it. But I couldn't see it again. And it occurred to me that the ferocious ambition of humans is never sated by dreams coming true, because there is always the thought that everything might be done better again. And that's probably true even if you live to be 90, although I'm jealous of the people who get to find out for sure. Then again, I'd already lived twice as long as Van Houten's daughter, what he wouldn't have given to have a kid die at 16. And suddenly Mom was standing between the TV and me, her hands folded behind her back. "Hazel," she said. Her voice was so serious, I thought something might be wrong. "Yes? Do you know what today is?" "It's not my birthday, is it?" She laughed. "Not just yet. It's July 14th, Hazel." "Is it your birthday?" "No." "Is it Harry Houdini's birthday?" "No." I am really tired of guessing. "It is Bastille Day." She pulled her arms from behind her back, producing two small plastic French flags and waving them enthusiastically. "That sounds like a fake thing, like Cholera Awareness Day." "I assure you, Hazel, that there is nothing fake about Bastille Day. Did you know that 223 years ago today, the people of France stormed the Bastille prison to arm themselves to fight for their freedom?" "Wow," I said. "We should celebrate this monumentous anniversary." "It so happens that I have now scheduled a picnic for your father in Holiday Park." She never stopped trying, my mom. I pushed against the couch and stood up. Together we cobbled together some sandwiches, and I found a dusty picnic basket in the hallway utility closet. It was kind of a beautiful day, really. It's real summer in Indianapolis, warm and humid. The kind of weather that reminds you that after a long winter, the world wasn't built for humans. We were built for the world. Dad was waiting for us, wearing a tan suit, standing in a handicapped parking spot, typing away on his handheld. He waved as we parked and then hugged me. "What a day," he said. "If we lived in California, they'd all be like this." "Yeah, but then you wouldn't enjoy them," my mom said. She was wrong, but I didn't correct her. We ended up putting our blanket down by the ruins, this weird rectangle of Roman ruins plopped down in the middle of a field in Indianapolis. But they aren't real ruins. They're like a sculptural recreation of ruins built 80 years ago. But the fake ruins have been neglected pretty badly, so they've kind of become actual ruins by accident. Van Houten would like the ruins. Gus, too. So we sat in the shadow of the ruins and ate a little lunch. "Do you need sunscreen?" Mom asked. "I'm okay," I said. You could hear the wind in the leaves, and on that wind traveled the screams of the kids on the playground in the distance. The little kids figuring out how to be alive, how to navigate a world that was not built for them by navigating a playground that was. Dad saw me watching the kids and said, "You missed running around like that?" "Sometimes, I guess, but that wasn't what I was thinking. I was just trying to notice everything. The light on the ruined ruins, this little kid who could barely walk discovering a stick at the corner of the playground, my mother zigzagging mustard across her turkey sandwich, my dad patting his handheld in his pocket and resisting the urge to check it, a guy throwing a frisbee that his dog kept running under and catching and returning to him. Who am I to say that these things might not be forever? Who is Peter Van Houten to assert as a fact the conjecture that our labor is temporary? All I know of heaven, and all I know, is death is in this park. An elegant universe in ceaseless motion, teeming with ruined ruins and screaming children. My dad was waving his hand in front of my face. "Tune in, Hazel. Are you there?" "Sorry, yeah. What?" Mom suggested we go see Gus. "Oh, yeah," I said. So after lunch, we drove down to Crown Hill Cemetery, the last and final resting place of three vice presidents, one president, and Augustus Waters. We drove up the hill and parked. Cars roared by behind us on 38th Street. It was easy to find his grave. It was the newest. The earth was still mounded above his coffin. No headstone yet. I didn't feel like he was there or anything, but I still I still took one of Mom's dumb little French flags and stuck it in the ground at the foot of his grave. Maybe passers-by would think he was a member of the French Foreign Legion or some heroic mercenary. Elle finally wrote back just after 6 p.m. while I was on the couch, watching both TV and videos on my laptop. I saw immediately there were 4 attachments to the email, and I wanted to open them first, but I resisted temptation and read the email. Dear Hazel, Peter was very intoxicated when we arrived at his house this morning, but this made our job somewhat easier. Bass, my boyfriend, distracted him while I searched through the garbage bag Peter keeps the fan mail in. But then I realized that Augustus knew Peter's address. There was a large pile of mail on his dining room table, where I found the letter very quickly. I opened it and saw that it was addressed to Peter, so I asked him to read it. He refused. At this point, I became very angry, Hazel, but I did not yell at him. Instead, I told him that he owed it to his dead daughter to read this letter from a dead boy, and I gave him the letter and he read the entire thing, and I said, and I quote him directly, send it to the girl and tell her I have nothing to add. I have not read the letter, although my eyes did fall on some phrases while scanning the pages. I have attached them here and then will mail them to you at your home. Your address is the same? May God bless and keep you, Hazel, your friend, L. I clicked open the 4 attachments. His handwriting was messy, slanting across the page. The size of the letters varying, the color of the pen changing. He'd written it over many days in varying degrees of consciousness. Van Houten, I'm a good person but a shitty writer. You're a shitty person but a good writer. We'd make a good team. I don't want to ask you any favors, but if you have time, and from what I saw, you have plenty. I was wondering if you could write a eulogy for Hazel. I've got notes and everything, but if you could just make it into a coherent whole or whatever, or even just tell me what I should say differently. Here's the thing about Hazel. Almost everyone is obsessed with leaving a mark upon the world, bequeathing a legacy, outlasting death. We all want to be remembered. I do too. That's what bothers me the most, is being another unremembered casualty in the ancient and inglorious war against disease. I want to leave a mark. But Van Houten, the marks human leave are too often scars. You build a hideous minimal, or start a coup, or try to become a rock star and you think, they'll remember me now. But A, they don't remember you. And B, all you leave behind are more scars. Your coup becomes a dictatorship. Your minimal becomes a legion. Okay, maybe I'm not such a shitty writer, but I can't pull my ideas together, Van Houten. My thoughts are stars. I can't fathom into constellations. We are like a bunch of dogs squirting on fire hydrants. We poison the groundwater with our toxic piss, marking everything mine in a ridiculous attempt to survive our deaths. I can't stop pissing on fire hydrants. I know it's silly and useless, epically useless in my current state, but I am an animal like any other. Hazel is different. She walks lightly, old man. She walks lightly upon the earth. Hazel knows the truth. We're as likely to hurt the universe as we are to help it, and we're not likely to do either. People will say it's sad that she leaves a lesser scar, that fewer remember her, that she was loved deeply but not widely. But it's not sad, Van Houten, it's triumphant. It's heroic. Isn't that the real heroism? Like the doctors say, first, do no harm. The real heroes, anyway, aren't the people doing things. The real heroes are the people noticing things, paying attention. The guy who invented smallpox vaccine didn't actually invent anything. He just noticed that people with cowpox didn't get smallpox. After my PET scan lit up, I snuck into the ICU and I saw her while she was unconscious. I walked back in behind a nurse with a badge, and I got to sit next to her for like 10 minutes before I got caught. I really thought she was going to die before I could tell her that I was going to die too. It was brutal. The incessant mechanizing of her intensive care. She had this dark cancer water dripping out of her chest, eyes closed, intubated. But her hand was still her hand, still warm, and the nails painted this almost dark blue-black, and I just held her hand and tried to imagine the world without us. And for about 1 second, I was a good enough person to hope she died, so she would never know that I was going to. But then I wanted more time so we could fall in love. And I got my wish, I suppose. I left my scar. A nurse guy came in and told me I had to leave. The visitors weren't allowed. And I asked if she was doing okay, and the guy said she's still taking on water. A desert blessing, an ocean curse. What else? She is so beautiful. You don't get tired of looking at her. You never worry if she's smarter than you. You know she is. She is funny without ever being mean. I love her. I'm so lucky to love her, Van Houten. You don't get to choose if you get hurt in this world, old man. But you do have some say in who hurts you. I like my choices. I hope she likes hers. I do, Augustus. I do. The end. Thank you guys so much for staying with me as I read this book. It was really fun and emotional and sad at parts, but I'm glad we were able to finish it, and I'm going to post a poll soon asking you guys what I should be reading next. Starting next week, we're going to start a new book, so be on the lookout for that soon. Also, again, sorry for any background noise that you heard, but like always, these videos are unedited. Just, you know, me doing my thing. And yeah, I will talk to you guys later. Bye, have a good day.